بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، اللهم صل على محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. فلعن الله أمة أسست أساس الظلم والجور عليكم أهل البيت، ولعن الله أمة دفعتكم عن مقامكم وأزالتكم عن مراتبكم التي رتبكم الله فيها. Continuing from last night, we were speaking about how in history you find turning points that change the course of history forever and ever. And of course, in the history of Islam, Ashura is one of the most major turning points that you find. And it was also discussed that these turning points, they don't happen overnight. There is a history to it, there's a background to it, there are roots that these incidents have deep within their times, deep within their context, and we can gain much knowledge from and gain many lessons from understanding the roots of certain turning points. One, and most importantly, because so that we don't repeat those mistakes. And inshallah, we're going to talk about these and continue the points that we were talking about. We were covering 5 points, 5 things we had in our agenda when we're going through the turning point of Ashura. Number one, if you remember, we likened this movement, this turning point, and the villain and the main culprit in this story, so to speak, we likened it to a tree, not because we just want to use an example, no. But rather, the Qur'an talks about this tree. And the ulama have spoken about this tree. And the Prophet has spoken about this cursed tree and poisonous tree to Islam, which was the tree of Bani Umayyah. That's what it was likened to, a tree. But a tree doesn't just come out just like that. A tree needs to grow and become strong. That's where the whole comparison began. Covering how this tree grew, that eventually Imam Hussein had to do what he did to uproot this strong and firm tree. Number one, we wanted to see what the stages were that this tree went through and put behind it to reach that level of strength that it had. Number two, we wanted to see what lessons each of these stages has for us today and what we have to be careful about today, or else another Ashura might happen at a lower level, at a lower scale, of course, but it'll be in line with the same thing that happened 1400 years ago. We don't want that to happen again. So the lessons that we can learn from it. Another good point, an important point that we're trying to highlight is that, number three, is that let's see how many of these stages that took place, were they the skills employed by Bani Umayyah? Or was it luck mostly? And Bani Umayyah just capitalized on our own mistakes as a Muslim ummah. Number four is the conclusion that we're going to draw from this whole story. Number five is, now that this tree has been uprooted of Bani Umayyah, we don't have Bani Umayyah today. Does that mean that Islam is set and we don't have anything to do anymore? These are the 5 points we're seeking to discuss these nights. The first part, which we talked about last night halfway, and I promise that we'll finish tonight, discusses the 8 stages of this tree. What do we put behind us from last night? Number one, Saqifa. I'm not going to talk about it too much. Saqifa, we said that's when the seed of the tree of Bani Umayyah was planted. And I explained how it is related to Bani Umayyah, although Saqifa had nothing to do with Bani Umayyah, but it took the Khilafah out of the hands of Bani Hashim. That's the first step. And the lessons we learn from that. Number two, the prohibition of the recording of hadiths and how the environment and the soil for this seed to grow was made ready so that the seed could grow, actually, the seed that was planted of the tree of Bani Umayyah. Number three, Muawiyah was made governor of Sham. The Bani Umayyah, they get their first pushes, their first signs of life, you can say, when this seed is watered, the first amount of strength that is given and rulership is given to Muawiyah, this is the beginning of this seed now starting to actually move and wants to crack out. The plant wants to begin to grow. But we all know that the seed at that stage is still weak. If in any of these stages you get in the way of that plant, that weak plant, that seed, you're still good. But the Muslim Ummah kept messing up again and again. So Muawiyah is made governor. The lessons we learn from that: the seed is now moving around, wants to come out. Number four, Uthman is made Khalifatul Muslimin through the second Saqifah, we called it. And that's when Khilafah, which was taken out of the hands of Bani Hashim, now comes into the hands of Bani Umayyah, because Uthman was Bani Umayyah. And this seed now cracked. Underground still, but it cracked open, and this plant that wants to grow to become a sapling, to become a tree, all of a sudden is in a new environment now. It wants to grow. This is where we got to. Till here, brothers, as I said last night, Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, I got this. Don't worry. If the Muslim Ummah messed up once, twice, three times, four times, it's okay. It's okay. I have things under control. So you see, Imam Ali, he's taking care of the Muslim Ummah in these 25 years that he's not Khalifa. Why? What do you mean Imam Ali says, I got this, don't worry? Because Imam Ali knows that once the third one dies, the fourth one is going to probably be him. And when he becomes Khalifa, what's he going to do? He's going to take care of all the things that were messed up, because he still has a lot of years ahead of him. He's still young. He will have a chance to change things back. So it doesn't seem like Imam Ali is too worried. And that's why he says, when all the calamities befall him after he becomes Khalifa, he says, if only, لو استوت قدماي, if my two feet were firm and I wasn't being shaken around by all the things that are happening in this day and age that I'm in, لغيرت أشياء, I would have changed things back. They didn't give him the chance. But why didn't they give him the chance? He could have. He's letting us know. But there were problems and obstacles. When did these actual obstacles begin? The first four stages, brothers, they were not the problem that much. Although they would have killed that seed in the beginning. But they didn't. But then the real problems start from tonight, brothers, we're going to talk about. It starts with stage five of our little tree that wants to grow. The assassination of Uthman. Now, as Shia, some people will not be too upset about this, right? Yes? They won't be too upset. Okay, they say he was assassinated. Okay, whatever. But no, we have a bigger issue here that inshallah we have to get into. Brothers, we need some insight. You can't just be emotional and have that approach. Before we get into that, don't panic. They have asked me to ask you to stand up. That's what they told me before. Move forward so that I don't have to keep asking you to move up in the middle of the majlis, inshallah. With a loud salawat, I want the brothers to get up, please. Please. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa Ali Muhammad. Get up, please. Get up. Don't worry. And move forward as much as you can, please. Thank you. It's Ahsantum, Ahsantum. I'm still seeing space in the front here. Now you can just move up a little bit more. We're going to be full tonight, so. Alhamdulillah, people got up. If you hadn't got up, it would make me look bad. We're going to probably have to do this again one more time. Not getting up, but to move forward. Okay. Assassination of Uthman. Very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. If this hadn't happened, then Ashura wouldn't have probably happened. Imam Ali would have fixed things up. Let's talk about this assassination a little bit. Stage 5 of our tree. The Tulaqa, after Uthman came to power, 12 years he ruled, the Tulaqa, the freed ones, the losers, the ones that society could care less about, now all of a sudden the Tulaqa are taking power everywhere. They say from Khurasan all the way to north of Africa, who's ruling these different regions under the main Khilafah? Who's ruling them? They're all Bani Umayyah. One after another, Uthman puts people that he knows, his buddies, his families, his relatives, in power. And they're ruling those regions. And they're messing up. The public treasury is being looted. The money that is being given to people that were enemies of Rasulullah, now all of a sudden, They become friends of Rasulullah. Why? Because there's money involved. Money is being given, handed out easily to people that the Prophet may have cursed in his time. Marwan, for example. We're not going to get a chance to talk about Marwan, that in Ziyarat Ashura, the Imam curses Alu Marwan, what they did. They were as bad as Bani Umayyah, Bani Sufyan. They were as bad, Bani Marwan. So even Ahlul Sunnah, they will tell you that the first 6 years were good of Uthman's rule, the second 6 years went bad. Of course, the ones that are more moderate, the ones that aren't very extreme. The ones that are extreme, no, they say Uthman was perfect till the end. That doesn't concern us right now and what we're after. Just to let us know how bad this assassination is, let's go straight to the words of Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam. What does he say in Sermon 164 of Nahjul Balagha? Once again, the numbering might be different in your Nahjul Balaghas, although I know probably no one's going to check this out later. But it would be good if you look. I understand, Nahjul Balagha is kind of hard. You have to understand the context in which the sermons were delivered in. Anyway, he says, once they have surrounded the palace of Uthman, and the people are angry, they've come from Egypt, they've come from Yemen, they want to kill the Khalifa because everything is bad. Nothing of Rasulullah is being upheld anymore. Imam Ali, they send him first. Because Ali, everyone knows that if Islam is surviving till today, it's because of him. Till Uthman's time, we know Imam Ali was contributing left and right. So let's send him, an impartial individual who can intercede, who can be the middleman and do some arbitration on our behalf. So Imam Ali goes to him. This is in Nahjul Balagha. He says to Uthman, Ali ibn Abi Talib says to him, the people are behind me and have made me an ambassador between you and themselves. But by Allah, I do not know what to say to you. Look at the wording, brothers. What can I tell you? Like, it's too messed up. The situation is too bad. I know nothing which you do not know. Look at how he says it, Imam Ali. He says, listen, me and you, and look at how low he brings himself, Imam Ali, of course. He says, me and you, we were both companions of the Prophet. There's nothing that I know that you wouldn't know. We all know the same thing. Why aren't you doing it? I know nothing in this matter which you do not know, nor can I lead you to any matter of which you are not aware. You know what you're supposed to do. You certainly know what we know. We have not come to know anything before you, which we could tell you, nor did we learn anything in secret which we should convey to you. O Uthman, we were both Sahabas, so to speak. We were both Sahaba. We were both up there in the ranking amongst the people. You sat in the company of the Prophet of Allah as we did. And then he goes on, the Imam, he talks about how you know what you were supposed to do. Then fear Allah in your own self, for by Allah you are not being shown anything, as if you are blind. And then the Imam goes on, blind, wake up. This is the part we need now. He says, certainly the worst man before Allah is the oppressive Imam. Of course, Imam here doesn't mean the ma'sum Imam. It means the person who is leading the people. Is the oppressive Imam who has gone astray and through whom others go astray. He destroys the accepted sunnah. So he's indirectly saying these are the things that have happened. One, oppression. The oppressive Imam. Two, destroys the accepted sunnah. Three, revives abandoned innovations. Look at all the bad things that are happening in this time. I heard the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam saying, on the Day of Judgment, the oppressive Imam will be brought without anyone to support him or anyone to advance excuses on his behalf, and then will be thrown into hell where he will rotate as the handmill rotates. Then eventually he will be confined to its hollow. Okay. So still we're looking for what the assassination has to do with all of this, of Uthman. Till here, Imam Ali is letting him know all the bad things that have happened under his rule. But now let's look at this. Let's look at this now. This paragraph. I swear to you by Allah that you should not be that imam of the people who will be killed. The imam of the people who will be killed. Till then, had any of the khulafa had been killed? No. Well, Umar had been attacked, but not by the people, by one person. But here he says, the imam of the people who will be killed because it has been said that an imam of this people will be killed, after which killing And fighting will be made open for them till the day of judgment. Subhanallah. If there is bloodshed today in the Muslim Ummah, Imam Ali says it goes back to your time. We're trying to find the roots of things, brothers. And he will confuse their matters and spread troubles over them. As a result, they will not discern truth from wrong. Till today, no matter how much you say, Muawiyah, wake up, look what he did. Muawiyah radiallahu anh, you have to say. Of course, alhamdulillah, more and more of the scholars are waking up. But still, they're very few in number. And when they do, they're vilified. Some of the scholars of the other schools of thought, now they're waking up and they're saying, yes, up till Uthman they were good. After Uthman, after Ali ibn Abi Talib, Muawiyah, we have issues with him. But they're not too many in number, unfortunately. As the result, they will not discern truth from wrong. People don't know today what's going on. You should not behave as the carrying beast for Marwan. Once again, this is why I wanted to discuss Marwan and Alu Marwan and what they've done. But we won't get the chance. Marwan is one of those people that if it wasn't for him, Ashura wouldn't have happened either. He says, Uthman, don't be the carrying beast. In other words, don't let Marwan ride you. Marwan has issues. He has problems. Don't be the carrying beast of Marwan so that he may drag you wherever he likes. Because Uthman was old. And he was under the sway and influence of individuals like Marwan of Bani Umayyah. So that he may not drag you wherever he likes despite your seniority of age and length of life. Brothers, let me just say this. That after Imam Ali spoke to Uthman, Uthman sent... He came out and promised everyone that he's going to fix things. And the people actually left. Those of you who've seen the movie or have read of the history, I don't want to get too much into it. I just want to say this part about Marwan. That on the way back, the people of Egypt, the people of Yemen, when they're going back, they run into one of the messengers of Uthman all of a sudden. They were convinced that things are going to move in the right direction after this. On the way back, they run into one of the messengers of Uthman. What are you doing here? What are you doing here? I don't know. Is there anything we're supposed to know? What's happening? So they go and look into his stuff. And what do they find? They find a letter stamped by Uthman's stamp that when these individuals arrive and come back to their regions, they are to be killed. Did you know that Marwan was the one who had the stamp? They say, of Uthman. He was in charge. Certain things happen in history. Maybe Uthman didn't even know this. And this letter was signed on his behalf. Anyway, the people come back and they take care of business. And they attack Uthman after that. They said, we're not going to be fooled anymore. And they take care of business. Now here, Muawiyah's in Sham. Uthman sends for Muawiyah. Oh, Muawiyah, help me. He says, help is coming. Help never came. This is where slowly, brothers... After the first four stages that I said all were luck, there was no skill involved for Bani Umayyah. Now Bani Umayyah knows what they're doing. Now Bani Umayyah is not enough. Muawiyah sees now there's a chance. Since Khilafah reached here, Bani Umayyah, and Bani Umayyah are ruling all over the Muslim Empire, now we have a chance to get rid of some of the Bani Umayyah so that another... branch of Bani Umayyah can come to power. Who is who? Bani Sufyan. So help never comes for Uthman. Help never comes for Uthman. It's time to make a transition slowly from Bani Umayyah to Bani Sufyan, the actual enemies of Islam. So help is not going to come. But all of a sudden, this seed who feels like now it's time to grow, a big stone is put in its way. And that's Ali ibn Abi Talib becoming Khalifatul Muslimin. Khalifatul Muslimin. So all of a sudden this seed that's sprouting, boom, hits its head against a stone, a big stone. Muawiyah all of a sudden, and others as well. Aisha, they say she was coming back from Umrah. She was in Medina. She was in Mecca coming back to Medina from Umrah. She finds out Uthman was assassinated. She says, who took his place? They say Ali took his place. Because there was a chance that Talha or Zubair might have taken. Ali took his place. She says, take me right back to Mecca. And she goes to Mecca next to the Kaaba. She says, I'm not leaving. Why did they kill Uthman? Why did Ali kill Uthman? Muawiyah says, why did Ali kill Uthman? Uthman's shirt is sent by his sister. Muawiyah's sister is sent to Sham. Plus the bloody fingers and severed fingers of Uthman's wife. There's a story to that as well. They send those to Sham, and Muawiyah is showing everyone these. He said, look what Ali did. So a big stone was set, Imam Ali's Khilafah. But at the same time, since it was an assassination and Uthman hadn't died a natural death, this acts as fertilizer for our seed. You know how fertilizer works, brothers? When I was a kid, I used to do these things, right? For, you know, science and science class and stuff, you had to make plants and stuff. Well, Allah makes plants. We just plant the seed. When that seed is struggling to come out, you put fertilizer, man, it's like steroids. And that thing just comes out and looks at you and thanks you, of course. Yes, there was a stone placed, but and this seed now is going to die out. Because when there's a stone on top, it's going to die. It can't come out. But fertilizer enhances the seed's growth. So what happened? They are going to use this assassination now. And no matter what Ali ibn Abi Talib does, he can't do anything here. So luck or skill? Stage 5, brothers. Luck or skill? Once again, luck. The assassination of Uthman was luck. But yes, Muawiyah used a little bit of skill too. Lesson that we take from this. That, oh people who were angry at Uthman, oh people who were fed up with Bani Umayyah, if you really were going to choose Ali ibn Abi Talib as the next Khalifa and you believed in him, and you unanimously voted for him, not like Saqifa, which they say it was unanimous, which it wasn't. If you really believed in him, when Ali ibn Abi Talib is trying to calm everybody, and he's saying, look, this is not the way to do it, you would have listened. You wouldn't have gotten all emotional. You wouldn't have tried to wipe everything out as soon as you can. No, you would have heeded to him and his advice. Today, the same thing is happening. Our ulama, some of them, when you're younger, you look at him, you say, oh, this person, he has his interests. No, this person is muttaqi. He's a marja. He knows what he's talking about. He sees what's going on in the world. He's telling you, this is not the way to go, but no, we're going to want to make sure that we make that the Ahlul Bayt, and we're serving the Ahlul Bayt and their cause. So we're going to say certain things and do certain things that are going to actually cause disunity, maybe even cause bloodshed, na'udhu billah. It's happening again and again, brothers. This seed was about to die out because of the Khilafah, but because of the Khilafah of Amir al-Mu'mineen. But since this Khilafah came through the means of the assassination of Uthman, it did not serve the cause. It did not serve the purpose. Let's move to stage number 6 of the growth of this tree. There's a stone in the way. What do you do when there's a stone in the way? You break that stone so the seed can grow more, right? You get rid of it. You need tools for this, brothers. Muawiyah needs a tool. True, I'm surviving, but I'm on life support. The fertilizer is like life support. This stone is in the way. What do we do? You need a tool, Muawiyah? We'll give you a tool. We'll give you a tool. The Battle of Jamal takes place. There are lessons to be learned for us today, here. The Battle of Jamal takes place. What do you have? On one side, you have great Sahaba. On the other side, you have great Sahaba. You have the wife of the Prophet on one side. People are confused. But one thing that everyone understands from this day forward, that the Battle of Jamal took place and thousands of people were killed, and according to the reports, is that, oh, you can break the sanctity of a Khalifa. Pay close attention, brothers. Till then, Khilafah was something sacred. Till then, people did not dare go against the Khalifa of the time. But then now a Khalifa unanimously voted into this Khilafah office, so to speak. Before him, a 6-person council had worked. Before him, Abu Bakr had said, Umar is my Khalifa. So these weren't unanimous. And even Saqifa, we believe, wasn't unanimous. But now, the 4th Khalifa, unanimously chosen. Did you know you can fight against a Khalifa? No, we didn't. Yes, the Battle of Jamal breaks the sanctity of a Khalifa. A chosen Khalifa. A Khalifa who hasn't messed up yet. you can go to war. This is the first case of a civil war. We all know the history of it and the details of it. The point that I want to make and get out of all of this is that the sanctity, when it is broken, others now can also stand up against the Khalifa of the Muslimin. So if I want to get rid of the Khilafah of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, what do? I can go to war with him. But Muawiyah was a second or third hand Sahabi. He couldn't have done it in the beginning. But thanks to the battle of Jamal, people now see that, okay, Sahabis can go against Sahabi. Muawiyah is also a Sahabi. He's probably thinking to himself, good thing I converted to Islam in the conquest of Mecca, and I did go to the Prophet in Medina for 2-3 years. Now I'm a Sahabi too. Sahabi versus Sahabi. It doesn't matter what grade of suhbah you have. Brothers, luck or skill, stage number 6. Oh God. Stage 6 was all luck again for Muawiyah and Bani Umayyah and Bani Sufyan. It wasn't that he did something, although they say there was some instigation, but at the end of the day, these are elites that are standing up against Amir al-Mu'mineen, elites of the Sahaba. So the lesson we take from this now is that if there are elites out there, they have to be extra careful. Just because you're elite doesn't mean you're good to go. I'm speaking to myself now. Oh, I just considered myself elite. Na'udhu billah, astaghfirullah. The elites have to be careful. The ones that are leading the communities have to be careful. The ones who are a little bit different than others have to be careful, because when they mess up, a sunnah and tradition is established, whether they like it or not. And you find different forms of this all over the place. If I'm sitting on this minbar, and you know how I live my lifestyle outside of off of this minbar, that's going to affect you. But if I'm a normal Muslim, it's not going to affect you. I can't sit on the minbar, brothers, and say, brothers, I am a human being just like you. No, I'm not. I have no right to say that. Whether I am wearing libas or I'm not even wearing libas, this minbar itself represents something. This minbar itself points to the person sitting on top of it and says, oh people, this is where Rasulullah used to sit. So you can take him as an example in many aspects of your life as well. If off of this minbar I'm living an extravagant life, and I am indirectly giving off this message that dunya is good, is okay, too much of it is okay, you know? In dunya is important, whether it's the way my house is, whether the way I dress is, whether the car I have, whatever it is. We've had teachers in Qom, I still remember, he would say it, that I got an inheritance. He needed a car, this our teacher. MashaAllah, he was great. He says, this money that reached me through inheritance is the most halal form of money that can reach you. But I never bought something that might stand out in the eyes of the people. I still remember his car. It was junk. Now, I'm not saying that we should do that. No, but each person should know their limits. The lesson we take from this, these elites, for their own reasons, Talha, Zubair, they weren't given a good share of the Khilafah. They did something which itself, of course, was wrong. But there's also another greater wrong that came out of it. And that's they broke the sanctity of Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam, this great Sahabi of the Prophet, who from his teens, when you read his story, you're blown away at the services that he gave for Islam, that he did for Islam. So we have to be careful. The elites have to be careful. Let's not use the word the elite. Anyone who is representing the deen has to represent it the right way. Or else you are establishing a tradition amongst the people, giving them a version of Islam that's not supposed to be done. This minbar, this garb, everything brings about restrictions. I'm sorry, I can't say I'm a normal person if I sit on the minbar. And that's why I have the utmost respect for our elders and the seniors. When I watch them, the ones that some of them haven't even been to Hawza even, but when they sit on the minbar, you look at him, he reminds you of Allah. Even from this community, I've watched little clips of some of your elders and seniors that sit on this minbar, and they speak, mashallah. When I sit and I listen to them, I just feel like I'm becoming more spiritual. That's a representative of the deen. Just because now one person hasn't been to hawza, that means they're off the hook. These are things that we have to be careful about. That's not true. Minbar is different. Okay, I think I've said enough about that. So, this is the tool that Muawiyah can use now. The tool has been introduced. This seed that was suffocating under the stone, which was the Khilafah of Amir al-Mu'mineen, there is a way out for it. Slowly we're going to put a hole into this stone. Stage number seven, the Battle of Siffin takes place. Why? Amir al-Mu'mineen, in the beginning, he says, he knows what Muawiyah is all about. Muawiyah, you're ruling Sham. That means you have to report to me. So give me your bay'ah. Muawiyah says, you know, I want to give you my bay'ah, you know. But, you know, it's just that Uthman was killed, you know. And since I'm his distant cousin, I want to make sure that we retaliate. And we kill the ones whose hands were stained with the blood of Uthman. Oh Ali, I so want to give you bay'ah. Yeah? I so do want to give you bay'ah. But just please, before I can do that, send me the killers of Uthman so that I can just give you bay'ah wholeheartedly. Imam Ali says, no. I'm Khalifatul Muslimin. Give me your bay'ah. How come during Abu Bakr's time, those who did not give bay'ah, for example, Malik bin Nuwayra, they were killed. It's okay. But now, from the Sahaba, Amir al-Mu'minin has become Khalifa. No bay'ah. What are you talking about? Give me bay'ah, we'll take care of things later. No. Send me the killers first. I am the cousin of Uthman. And this is where Amir al-Mu'minin says, no, the battle has to take place now. The war is instigated. Amir al-Mu'minin has to fight Muawiyah, someone who is not is barely considered Sahabi, versus Amir al-Mu'minin. But who taught him this? In the Battle of Jamal, they taught Muawiyah that you can do this. There, you can have a war, a civil war in the Muslim Ummah. You know what hurts, brothers, though? Although it's very clear that these people were wrong in going against Amir al-Mu'mineen, you will find some extreme individuals. They're extreme from other schools. The extreme ones. They will tell you Ali ibn Abi Talib was not the truth. Ali ibn Abi Talib was closer to the truth. Muawiyah was farther away from the truth. Look at how much this concept of you being a Sahabi has gone into their minds. That one who fights Amir al-Mu'mineen, he's not in falsehood, he's farther away from the truth. Okay, tell us, then Ali is at least the truth and Muawiyah is farther away from truth, yes? They say, no, Ali was closer to the truth. Okay, then where's the truth, people? The truth is with people like Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, who's just stayed away from all bloodshed. What are you talking about? You mean Amir al-Mu'min has to just sit there when they attack Basra and they're killing people in Basra and just sit there and say, I want to be with the truth. I'm going to keep quiet as the Khalifatul Muslimin. I have no responsibility. When Muawiyah wants to fight and is not giving bay'ah, what's he supposed to just sit there? Just wanted to say that on the side. Why the Shia is so upset. But those are other discussions to talk about. What happens in the Battle of Siffin? Tens of thousands are killed. The war drags on for months. This is the part that we need to take lesson from here. Malik al-Ashtar, rahmatullah alayh, gets closer and closer to the camp of Muawiyah. It's almost over, brothers. It's almost over. And if Imam Ali succeeds in getting rid of Muawiyah, oh my God, today we wouldn't have anything of what is happening today in the world, in the Muslim world. We wouldn't. Ali would have fixed things. Malik al-Ashtar is this close now, brothers, to finishing the job. Brothers, it was over. The night before, they call it Laylatul Harir. It was the day of moaning and groaning of the army of Muawiyah. Why? They were all injured. They were all dying. They were all moaning in pain. Laylatul Harir. They don't have resolve. They don't have a fighting spirit anymore. That's why Malik al-Ashtar, the next day, he is this close. Muawiyah says, it looks like it's over. He says it to who? Amr bin al-As. Amr bin al-As says, I have a solution. It's not over. And you all know the story. The Qur'ans go on the spears. Let me just say this once right now here. When they say the Qur'ans go on the spears, some people think that they stuck the spears in the Qur'ans and lifted them. No, brothers. When you look in history, what history says, they tied these to the spears because the spears are the longest things they have. To take these up so everyone can see the Qur'ans. There was one Qur'an that they had brought from Sham, the master Qur'an, the big one, that they even rose that up so that everyone from the army of Ali ibn Abi Talib sees that we believe in the Qur'an. You are fighting people who believe in the Qur'an. All of a sudden, this army of Ali turns back to Ali. 20,000 brothers, they say. 20,000 of the army of Ali turn to Ali. They say, wait a minute. We thought we're fighting kuffar. We thought we're fighting people who don't believe in Qur'an. They have Qur'ans. Oh my God. They have Qur'ans. They're saying we believe in Qur'ans. They're even saying, let the Qur'an be the judge between us. Let's see what the Qur'an says and let's stop all of this bloodshed. We're tired. These are Muslims that are dying. Imam Ali says, I'm the walking Qur'an. I'm the breathing, living Qur'an. Don't be fooled. They surround Ali ibn Abi Talib. They say, either you tell Malik al-Ashtar to come back or we kill you. You know this story. Eventually, Malik al-Ashtar has to stop the war, the fight. And Muawiyah is given life again. He was almost dead. If Muawiyah had been killed, we would be so much better off right now. This is why Allama Tabatabai rahmatullah alayhi says, I do la'an of this individual after every salat. He changed the course of history. Yes, the ones before him too, we have issues with. But Imam Ali would have fixed those. This one was the big problem. The Khawarij are born. The Khawarij are born. They say, Ali, we're not going to fight people who believe in the Quran. Let the Quran be the judge between us. So then the tahkim takes place. This is one of the biggest tragedies of Islam, the tahkim. This stone that was in the way is now going to be removed, brothers. How? The hakamiyah takes place. Not only do they tell Imam Ali, you have to stop fighting, they say, you have to go sit down with Muawiyah or send a representative to discuss matters with the representatives of Muawiyah and choose what we have to do here. Choose what, who's going to be the Khalifatul Muslimin and so on. Imam Ali says, fine. We'll stop the war because you're about to kill me. You're about to kill me. Should I say it? Should I not say it? I'm looking at my clock. Brothers, let me just say something real quickly here. Imam Ali says in Nahjul Balagha, he says, I would have continued fighting. I would have continued, and I would have been killed when the Khawarij surrounded me. Did you know that? But he says, I looked at, because if he had continued fighting, Malik al-Ashtar would have finished the job there too. Let Ali go and Muawiyah go, fine. Because I have Al-Hasan alayhi salam. But then he says, I looked at Al-Hasan and Al-Husayn alayhi salam. That's when I noticed, if I get killed, they're going to come and protect me too. They're going to be killed too. And that's when Imamah is going to stop. And I'm not allowed to do that. So that's why he gave in to the Hakamiyyah. Whoa. Big stuff. Parentheses closed. Okay, Imam Ali says, we're going to go and we're going to do arbitration. We're going to see what the Quran says. But then they impose also who his representative is going to be. Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. Instead of Malik, instead of Ibn Abbas. They say, no, this guy. Imam Ali says, this guy doesn't even believe in us fighting. He's not even here. Abu Musa, he left. He said, I don't want to have anything to do with fighting. He doesn't believe in our cause. They said, no, he has to. Because he's the only one who's going to bring peace. And this whole hakamiyah takes place. The two armies, they separate, they go back. Then these representatives meet up later. Then when they meet up, they discuss things and they come to a conclusion. What's the conclusion? That Imam Ali goes and Muawiyah goes, a third party is going to be elected as the Khalifa. Yes? It's funny. So Abu Musa goes up on the minbar. He says, I removed Ali ibn Abi Talib from Khilafa. He comes down. Amr bin al-As, the representative of Muawiyah, goes up. He removed the person he's representing. I keep Muawiyah as Khalifatul Muslimin. And they go home. Ali ibn Abi Talib, when he hears this, he says, we're not going to give in to this arbitration. We said the judge is the Quran. Where in the Quran does it say that I will be removed from Khilafah? Our agreement was go by the Quran. So what does Imam Ali do? He puts up another army, gets another army to go back to fight Muawiyah. This is important. Muawiyah. To go fight Muawiyah. But that's when the Khawarij, who had issues with Ali, they had grown. And the Battle of Nahrawan has to take place. Resources have to be wasted. People have to be killed. Time has to be wasted. Imam Ali takes care of that. And once again, he wants to go fight Muawiyah. That is here then, Ibn Muljam comes and takes the life of Ali ibn Abi Talib. When Ali goes, you cannot fight Muawiyah anymore, brothers. If Muawiyah was that big of a person to be able to fight Ali, then Imam al-Hasan, what was it, luck or skill here, brothers? Again, there was skill here, but they got lucky. The people of Siffin and Muawiyah's army got lucky. Muawiyah got lucky because the people were so off that they were fooled by this. They were fooled. Look at all the luck that Bani Umayyah had. Brothers, Ashura happened because of our own mistakes. Lesson that we learn from all of this, brothers. Number one, who were these Khawarij? You can say Ashura is the result of the Khawarij, brothers. In a sense. These Khawarij, the hadith tell us that they were ahdath. They were young, emotional, energetic. They wanted to do something. They wanted to do something different. Which brings us to today. Someone says, I follow Ma'sum, I don't follow this Marja. Why? Because the hadith says this. I know, but the Marja has also seen this hadith. I only go by this. This hadith says do lan like this. This hadith says do that. That's it. Literalism. Both in the Sunni school and in the Shia school. This alim is not even Muslim. What are you talking about? This great alim. Why? Because he studied philosophy. We have hadith about philosophy that says whoever does it is out of the deen. Well, oh individual, whoever you are, we also have hadiths against taqlid that say taqlid is haram. He'll tell you, no, those are talking about something specific. Well, the ones that talk about philosophy might be talking about something specific. Takfir of great alims? Brothers, wake, let's be careful. Ashura, if Muawiyah was killed, Ashura wouldn't have happened. Who got in the way of Muawiyah being destroyed? Khawarij. With their literalist approach. And you have the same patterns in the Shia school today and in the Sunni school today. Literalism destroys. Be very careful. Don't fall in these traps. Don't fall in these traps. This hadith said this. Well, yes, this hadith, but the tens of other hadiths say something else. Our ulama are everything we have, and some people are trying to cut this link between the people and the ulama. And when that happens, brothers, Islam is gone. People will go in different directions. These ulama that have spent their lives in this field. Let's be very careful. That's the lesson we learn from this part of history. And finally, okay, now the stone is removed. The fertilizer was given. It was enhanced. What happens after this? There's a little bit of soil left, brothers, for this seed to actually, the plant to pop out of the ground. The soil isn't that hard. Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, the madhloom, he still had a good shot with the numbers that he had. But he had no choice because the army was divided in its understanding. And they were attacking him himself, their own commander, Imam al-Hasan. The army, you guys know this story. Imam al-Hasan has no choice but to give in to the ceasefire. Now, the other version says that, oh, Imam Hassan wanted to stop the bloodshed. I told you this before, right? Oh, he didn't like the way his father was doing things. Once things were in his hands, he said, okay, we're going to stop the bloodshed. But that's not what we believe in. His army was divided, and there was no choice. He gave in to the peace treaty. What happens? The peace treaty, what does it say? Well, let's not call it a peace treaty. Let's call it a ceasefire. What are the terms of this ceasefire? Muawiyah is Khalifatul Muslimin. It's all over, brothers. It's all over. This plant, this sapling, pushes aside the soil and comes out of the ground. And for the next 20 years, Muawiyah is Khalifatul Muslimin. You think he's going to sit quietly? He works so beautifully and so nicely. And he takes away Amir Ali ibn Abi Talib from the people. Everyone hates him now, in Sham at least. He takes away Ahlul Bayt from the people. Look at this narration. Ibn Abbas, qala Ibn Abbas li Muawiyah. Ibn Abbas says to Muawiyah this later. Ala takuffu an shatmi hadha ar-rajul? Aren't you going to stop cursing this individual, Imam Ali alayhi salam, on the members and everything? Qala Muawiyah, what did he say? ما كنت لأفعل حتى يربو عليه الصغير ويهرم فيه الكبير. I'm not going to stop this until the little ones grow with this cursing and la'an of Ali ibn Abi Talib. And the old and those who are older, they get very old in this tradition. فلما ولي عمر بن عبد العزيز كف عن شتمه. Umar bin Abdul Aziz, one of the later khalifas, he stopped this tradition, but it's too late now. He stopped it, and when he stopped it, what did the people say? This shows that it was well rooted. What did the people say? فَقَالَ النَّاسِ تَرَكَ السُنَّةِ. He put aside the sunnah and tradition. Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, that he stopped us from cursing the imam. Muawiyah, in these 20 years, makes sure that this little plant that now sprung out of the ground grows to be a sapling, and then grows to be a tree. Imam Hassan can't do anything about it. For 10 years, Imam Hassan is killed. For 10 years, Imam Hussein can't do anything about it. 10 years, Imam Hussein keeps quiet too. Until Yazid becomes Khalifa. Now's the time, brothers. But this is a tree. You can't just weed it out like a sapling. It's a big tree with a big trunk. You have to put some actual effort. And so much effort. Because you don't want to just cut this tree, it'll regrow. You have to uproot it, brothers. If you want to uproot the tree of Bani Umayyah and Bani Sufyan, it takes blood. And you have to go inside and destroy it from within. Abu Abdullah's blood has to be spilled. So that Lady Zainab is taken prisoner. Lady Zainab is taken all the way to Sham and Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam, and from within they have to raise awareness amongst the people and show the people, these we are the Ahlul Bayt. How they changed Sham, how they changed the Muslim Ummah, they changed history forever. Imam Hussein, it's as if he is in Sham. His blood was spilled, but his soul and his head go with Lady Zainab to Sham. And they do the job from there. There was no other way. Imam Hussein, if he wants to go to Sham and get rid of this tree, he can't. He has to stay in Karbala. His head has to go to Sham and Kufa to raise awareness so that me and you can be here today. These are the stages of the tree of Bani Umayyah. We have to have understanding. So many lessons that are learned from this story, from this tree. Number four that was on our list, and number five that was on our list of our main agenda, number four was that what's the main conclusion we draw from all of this is that if the ummah doesn't show weakness from within, the outside enemy can't do anything. If from within you disunite, then that's when the outside enemy can come. Even when it comes to us being good people, Imam Ali says, Shaytan's not your main enemy. In a'da aduwik nafsuka allati bayna janbayk. Don't look at Shaytan and curse Shaytan. These people who go and they in Hajj and they throw stones at the Jamarat and Shaytan. Some of them you see him, the guy, he has a beard this long, he runs from far away and he smashes that stone into Shaytan. Smash that stone in your head. Shaytan, he's just whispering things. Have you taken care of your nafs? Imam Ali says, that's the main weakness. That's the main enemy. You can't have that inner weakness if you don't take care of your nafs. That's when the outer enemy can come in. Or else Shaitan can't do anything. And then once they throw all their stones, the little sack they have that's full of the remaining stones, they throw that, the whole sack at the thing, at the Jamarat. Really? This much of an understanding? Even when it comes to our own building and self-building, we have to start from within. Let alone the Muslim Ummah. The Muslim Ummah had to start from within and change from within. They didn't. That's why Ashura took place. And finally, if the tree of Bani Umayyah, Imam Hussein's job, main job, was to uproot the tree of Bani Umayyah, he taught us that if Islam is ever in danger again, you have to give it your 100%. 100%. Now today, alhamdulillah, we're safe. We don't have to give our lives. But we have to make an effort to spread the message more and more. At least be good Muslims ourselves, represent more. And inshallah, we're going to talk about this in one of these nights. What we're going to be doing now. What the Ahlul Bayt, what direction they gave us, inshallah ta'ala. These two nights were to cover this story and the lessons that we can draw from them. Inshallah, Allah gives us tawfiq, gives us awareness that we are careful not to become just like those in the past, inshallah. But it came with a price, brothers. It came with a price. A very, very great price. The Ahlul Bayt had to give their lives. One of those, Qasim ibn al-Hasan alayhi salam. Assalamu alayka ya Abu Abdullah. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, his story echoes the story of Ibrahim alayhi salam. Yes. When we look, we see, yes, Imam Hussein had to sacrifice his son. Prophet Ibrahim had to sacrifice his son. But the difference between the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam is that one was actually materialized and actualized, the other wasn't. Prophet Ibrahim never slit the throat of Ismail. But Imam Hussein had to give his son away and his sons away. And their throats were slit. Another thing you see in Prophet Ibrahim's story is Lady Hajar. When Ismail is an infant on the ground and the sands, they say, Hajar went to Safa Marwa, Safa Marwa. She's looking for water, she can't find it. And then she sees that Ismail has dug his heel into the sand of Karbala and water has come out of the sand. There was another person who dug his heels into the sand of Karbala, Qasim ibn al-Hasan. In the end of the musibah you shall see that he dug his heels into the ground, but for another reason. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he has something special for orphans, let alone the orphan of Hassan alayhi salam. The son of Hassan, who, I don't know, should we call him the son of Hassan or should we call him the son of Hussein? Because Imam Hussein has raised this child. This child has grown up in the lap of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein is very sensitive with the orphans. That's why on Ashura, he wouldn't give permission to Qasim. Although the night before when Qasim said, "Oh Abu Abdullah, oh uncle, you've shown everyone their place in Jannah. Will I also experience Shahada tomorrow?" He says, "Tomorrow you will. But what is it? How do you feel about Shahada?" He says, "Ahla min al-asal." Look at the ma'rifah, brothers. That I don't see it as pain and suffering. It's a bridge that I'm going to cross. And since I'm going to go next to my father, Hassan, since I'm going to go to my mother Fatima, it's ahla min al-asal. Yes, you will be martyred tomorrow too, but you will undergo a great tragedy, O Qasim. Although Hussein has promised Qasim, he's still not giving him permission on Ashura. Qasim comes, "Oh uncle, can I go?" "No, you can't go. What are you talking about? Go back inside the tent." "Oh uncle, can I go?" "No, now's not the time yet." Qasim sees that apparently he's not going to give me a chance to go. I want Shahada. My father is waiting. "Uncle, can I go?" "No." Some reports say he goes and asks for the letter that Hassan had given, alayhi salam. He brings the letter to Imam Hussein. "Oh, Uncle Hussein, look at this letter that my father has written for this time." And in that letter, Imam Hassan says, "When that time comes, oh brother, give Qasim permission. I know he's a child." But he's a child. He's not old yet. Imam Hussein, he gives him permission, but he gives him permission. They weep so hard that the reports say they both fall unconscious. Hussein knows it's over. His Ali and Al-Akbar has gone. Owen and Muhammad are gone. Everyone was gone. I was keeping you at least. Qasim wants to go. Hussein doesn't want him to go. They cry so much they could fall unconscious. God knows what is going through the heart of Hussein. They come back. He's getting him ready. The armor doesn't fit Qasim. He puts a white shirt on Qasim as if this is your shroud. Qasim, go. What can I do? Qasim is ready to go. They say he is so happy to go. He's so ready to go that when he gets on the horse, his shoe is still untied. He can care less about this dunya. He wants to just go. He bounced the horse and goes. God knows that Hussein's soul goes with Qasim. He goes to the battlefield. He's fighting. They say he kills of the enemy. Some say he would look at his trainer. He would look back to his trainer, Abbas. Am I doing good, Abbas? Have you taught me well, Abbas? He fights. Some reports say up to 30-something people he kills. And they're surrounding him. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. They surround Qasim's body. Brothers, remember, he's not wearing armor. He's wearing a white shirt like a kafan. His mother, I hope, is not watching when they're surrounding him. Some reports say his mother is watching too. They surround him. He's still defending himself. One of the enemy turns to the person next to him. He says, I swear by Allah, I will kill him. He says, why? Let the people who surrounded kill him. What's wrong with you? He's a kid. But this person says, I swear. He rushes towards Qasim and strikes Qasim in the head. Qasim falls on the sands. Ya Allah! He calls his uncle. His uncle is waiting to hear his voice. He darts out of the tents like a hawk. He attacks the killer. The killer falls. He calls out to his friends, come help me. A fight breaks out and dust goes in the air. Qasim's body is being kicked around by the hooves of the horses. This white shirt of Qasim is stained with blood. The body of Qasim. The fragile body of Qasim. The body of Qasim without armor is kicked around under the hooves. Blood is all over the place. The dogs, they say it's settled. Abu Abdullah is next to the body of Qasim. Oh, my nephew, it is hard on me for you to call your uncle, but he can't do anything. Oh, Qasim, what have you done to my heart? I raised you as an orphan. They say he hugged Qasim's body, taking Qasim back to the tent. But the reports say, as Qasim is being carried back to the tent, he was in so much pain that he was digging his heels into the sands of Karbala. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Al-Ali al-Azim. Sayalamu al-Ladina al-Zalamu. Ayyamun qalabin yanqalibun. اللهم اغفر للمؤمنين والمؤمنات والمسلمين والمسلمات الأحياء منهم والأموات تابع اللهم بيننا وبينهم بالخيرات
اللهم اشف مرضانا وارحم موتانا وسلم ديننا ودنيانا. اللهم احفظ علماءنا ومراجعنا وعجل اللهم في فرج مولانا صاحب الزمان. صلوات.